people in them.
All right, Tavos, good morning. Today's daf is Kuf Tes. We're going to begin on Kuf Tes. So says the Gemara, we left off Tanya, we left off four lines down on the top of Kuf Tes Amud Aleph. So remember again, we're talking about this idea. The whole discussion was what you can eat, what you can't eat on Erev Pesach. Excuse me, I'm sorry. You know, the Braisa that we left off with on Kuf Ches Amud Beis was speaking about the idea that we try to keep the children awake for the Seder, and one of the ways in which we do that is by going ahead and giving them klayos, parched grain, sweets, in order to go ahead and keep them up. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Eliezer says, Chotfin matzos belele pesachim. Literally, it means we grab the matzah on the night of Pesach. By the way, not a reference to the stealing of the afikoman. That's we'll talk about that a little bit later. But we grab the matzos on the night of Pesach. Why? B'shil tinokos shelo yisharu, in order that the children not fall asleep. What does that mean? Take a look at the Rashbam. Chotfin matzah, says the Rashbam. He says, actually, the truth is, if you take a look, hey, look at the Rashbam. Magbina sakara b'shil tinokos shi yisharu. So the first thing the Rashbam says, actually quoting Rashi, that we go ahead and we lift up the ka'ara, we lift up the Seder plate, in order that the children should go ahead and ask questions. Remember again, right after Manashtana, excuse me, we go to him, we remove the Seder plate from the table. There are a lot of things we do over the course of the Seder just in order to encourage questioning. So according to Rashi, that's what it means, Chotvin Matzah. Now it's interesting. Istim Mefarshi, Chotvin Matzah, Ochlin Maher, Shnei Lashonas Haloper Shabeinu, V'yishkarsin, So Rashbam quotes a couple of different approaches, but actually the last one that he actually also discusses was that we don't let the children eat too much, because when people eat a lot, they get tired, and when they get tired, they fall asleep. So in order to encourage the children to stay up, we don't let them eat a lot over the course of the evening prior to the meal. That's Lashon Chotvin Es HaMatzos. So whether it means we lift the Seder plate, whether it means we take away the matzo, whether it means we don't let them eat a lot, whatever it is, the point over here is that we do things over the course of the evening to ensure that the children do not fall asleep in order that they're engaged in the Seder. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Amru Lava Rabbi Akiva. Actually, a beautiful Gemara. They say about Rabbi Akiva, Miyamav Lohigia Eis La'amo Bebeis HaMedrash. Rabbi Akiva never announced that it's time to go ahead and leave the base medrash. Meaning, Rabbi Akiva never encouraged anyone to leave the base medrash, with two exceptions. Chutz me'arvei psochim ve'erev yom kippurim, with the exception of Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, ve'erev Pesach b'shil tinokos shelo yishanu. So on Erev Pesach, in order that the children should not sleep, ve'erev yom kippurim kedei shiachilu es b'neihem. On an Erev Yom Kippur, it was in order that they be able to feed their children. Now it's actually interesting. He says, look at the Rashbam over here. So Rashbam writes, Chutz me'arvei psochim. So he says, Kedei shiyishanu es atinokos biyom velo balayla. Now what it means is that in order to help with the children should take a nap on Erev Pesach, in order that they not fall asleep at night. B'shas hagoda. Inami, kishem akfin adalayla l'acher shehichshif yishenim atinokos. Now, Shashan gives two possibilities. Number one is that the fathers could go ahead and put the kids to sleep on Erev Pesach, so they could take a nap. Interesting enough, the Rashbam says, why do you need the fathers to come home and do that? Right? Okay. We won't, right? If you're toast enough, be politically correct. Right? Why can't the mothers put the kids? Why do the fathers have to come home to do that? So therefore, again, the Rashbam actually brings out a second idea, which was what? Which is what it means that don't stay in the base medrash. It means don't come home late from shul. That what Rabbi Akiva used to urge people is that on the night of Pesach, get home on time in order that you can start the Seder at the earliest moment possible in order to ensure that the children will be able to remain awake throughout the Seder. And what about Erev Yom Kippur? And Erev Yom Kippur, again, remember there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So in order to ensure that the children will eat, the family will eat, so Rabbi Akiva used to tell again the students to go home and take care of the needs of their family on Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur. Tana Rabbanan. So now I'll say the Gemara quotes of Raisa. Chayiv Adam l'sameach banav u'bnei beisel b'regel. A person is obligated to go ahead And literally, l'sameach. Also, this is actually very interesting. L'sameach means to enable others to rejoice. So I have an obligation to ensure that my family members are able to rejoice on Yom Tov. Shene'emar, v'samachta b'chagecha. Because the Torah says, you shall rejoice on your Yom Tov. Now again, what's interesting over here is that, remember, the pasuk in its entirety says, v'samachta b'chagecha, ato, ובנך ובתך ועבדך ועמוסך והלוי והגר והיוסם והעמון אשר בשעריך. So it's interesting. Even though the lashon of v'samachta b'chagecha means you shall rejoice, but the way that the Torah phrases it is you shall rejoice along with what? Your son, your daughter, your maidservant, your servant, the lady, the kan, the ger, the stranger, the widow, the orphan, who live in your gates. So the Gemara understands from that. Now, what does that mean? I'm supposed to rejoice along with all of them. So the Gemara understands that that represents a directive. And what's the directive? That I have an obligation to ensure that they are able to enjoy the Yom Tov as well. That's my obligation. So again, Chayiv Adam L'Sameach Banav U'Bnei Beiso B'Regel. A person is obligated to go ahead and rejoice or gladden the hearts of his children and the members of his household in Yom Tov Shnemar. V'Sabachta V'Chagecha. So, B'Meh M'Samachtam. M'Samcham, excuse me. Through what do you gladden the hearts of your family? So the Braisa says, B'Yayin, with wine. And we'll say, the reason why this is being brought up now is because, remember, the earlier Braisa also said that who's chayv in dalet kosos? Men, women, and children. Rabbi Yehuda came along and said the dalet kosos is fine for the men and women, but not really going to work for the children. So this Braisa represents a similar theme. V'samachta v'chagecha, how are you supposed to have simchas yom tov? Wine. So everybody's going to have wine. Rabbi Yehuda comes along, so just like Rabbi Yehuda came along before and said, well, not so fast. The men and women can have wine, but the children will have the klayos and it goes in. Mm-hmm. So Rabbi Yehuda says over here, anoshim bara'i lahem, v'noshim bara'i lahem. Everybody will have that which is appropriate for them. So what does that mean? So the Gemara says, anoshim bara'i lahem. So what's appropriate for men? What's good for men? Yayin, wine. Wine. Look at Rashi. Oh, actually, not yet. I'm sorry. So, anoshim b'ray lahem, v'noshim b'ray lahem. And what happens with the noshim? V'noshim b'may, tani Rav Yosef, be'bavel big day tzivonin, Beretz Yisrael, big day pishtan miguhatsin. So, we'll say the Gemara essentially answers that for men it's wine, and for women it's clothing. And the nature of the clothing will depend on what? Will depend on your location. So in Bavel, again, it was common that the women would get colored clothing in honor of Yom Tov. And in Eretz Yisrael, the custom was that women would get pressed linen garments in honor of Yom Tov as well. Okay. So the Gemara Maseches Beitzah goes into much greater depth with this. The concept that Simchas Yom Tov is a relative Simcha. And everybody has to express that Simcha in a way that is matim, in a way that is appropriate for them. Fine. So the Gemara goes weiter. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, or Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, Bizman she Beis HaMikdash Kayum, when the Beis HaMikdash is standing, Ein Simcha Ela Bebasar. There is only Simcha with meat. Shene'emar, V'zavachta Shlamim, V'achalta Sham. So because the Torah says that you shall go ahead and you shall offer up shlam, you will eat it there. V'samachta lifnei Hashem Elokecha. And you shall rejoice before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your God. V'achshav she'ein Beis HaMikdash Kayim. And now that the Beis HaMikdash is not standing, ein simcha ela b'yayin. The only simcha we really have is with wine. She'ne'emar v'yayin yisamach levav enosh. Wine will gladden the heart of man. That's actually interesting. If you take a look at Tosas, the Mabes Samcho B'Yayin, so Tosas says over here, Hainu Bizmanazeh. So when the Gemara says, when Rabbi Yehuda said before, remember, because we'll say these two Gemaras follow on the heels of each other. So you have Rabbi Yehuda saying, V'samachta b'chagecha is relative Simcha. Everybody has to find Simcha in that which gives them simcha. So for the women, it's going to be clothing. And what gives the men simcha? Wine. So right after that, you have this statement of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, well, really, there's only simcha bebasar. So which one is it? Is there simcha in yayin, or is there simcha in basar? To which Rabbi Yehuda says, but the simcha in basar is tied into what? It's not just meat. Rather, what is it tied into? It's tied into sacrificial meat. Carbon meat gives you. If you think about the message in that, it's actually quite profound. Why does carbon meat give you simcha and regular meat does not give you simcha? Even though many will say that regular meat does give plenty of simcha, the idea is because what does carbon meat represent? Carbon meat represents the greatest utilization of the material world. Because what are you doing? I'm taking this piece of flesh, I'm taking this piece of meat, and part of it's going to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and part of it's going to the Kohen, and part of it's going to me. It represents the greatest use of materialism in this world. I'm using it, yes, because I enjoy it, but I'm also using it for a higher purpose. Ein simcha gidolu mizo. There's no greater simcha in life than that. So Rabbi Yehuda says, it's not just the meat that gives you simcha, it's sacrificial meat that gives you simcha. And therefore Rabbi Yehuda says, in the absence of meat, the achshav she'ein beis hamikdash kayom. So now that the beis hamikdash is not there, she'll say, but you can still have meat even in the absence of the beis hamikdash. But what's the pshat? The pshat is that meat doesn't give you much simcha. It might be good, it might be tasty, it might be delicious, but it doesn't give you simcha. So what's the only thing in life, says Rabbi Yehuda, that gives you real simcha now in Yom Tov? That's yayin. Why? Because wine has the ability to gladden the heart of man. That's just part of the properties of wine. So now look at Tosos for just a moment. It's not going back. So Tosos now is commenting on Rabbi Yehuda's previous statement. So when Rabbi Yehuda said that men have simcha with wine, that refers to this time, in this present time. Ein simcha ela bebasser. So again, Rabbi said, this is a fascinating idea. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, true simcha Yom Tov is expressed through the consumption of sacrificial meat. And in the times post Beis HaMikdash, simcha is expressed through the consumption of yayin. And in fact, if you take a look, Tosa says, all right, we'll come back to Tosa later. Fine. So the Gemara goes weiter. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak says, Kasta Dimorisa Dahabi Bitsipori. So Kasta Dimorisa. What's Kasta Dimorisa? Take a look at the Rashbam. Kasta Dimorisa Mida. So Kistor, Kasta, depending on the Girsa. So Kasta, the Rashbam points out, was a Mida, was a measuring utensil. So you had a measuring utensil called the Kasta, and it held a certain amount, a certain volume. And it was specifically used, Shemokrin ba hamurias. Murias is fish fat. So this was a specific utensil of a specific size that was used. I guess they would sell fish fats by this amount. So kasta de muriasa dahavi bitzipori, that they used to have in the city of Tzipori. So the Gemara says, havas kamin luga de mikdasha. This was the same size as a lug in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, I'll see why this is important in just a moment. Uba misharin revias shal Pesach. And through this utensil, you can go ahead and measure out a proper revias for Pesach. Now, also, remember, we established yesterday that what's the minimum size of the Dalet Kosos? Minimum size? A revias, right? Remember, we had a machlokes that, according to the first gears, it looked like the Gemara was saying that it's a quarter of a revius. But then it turned out that it's not really true. It was saying that's the amount of wine concentrate you need in order to make a full revius of wine. But at the end of the day, everybody agreed that lemaisa, you need a revius of wine. So here's what's interesting. So the Gemara is saying over here, if you want to see how much a revius is just practically, so what do? Fill up a container, fill up this kista without the morisa. Leave out the fish fat, right? Clean it out well and fill it up with liquid. And then what happens? So that you can measure revias. Now, how would you measure revias? So that, take a look at the Rashbam. So Rashbam says, "Uba misharin revias shal Pesach, shememalin osa." You would fill it up with liquid. "Umechalkin osad la'arba kosos dilug arba revias." So also remember what the Gemara said. The Gemara said that this kista dimorisa holds a lug. A lug is comprised of four revios. So four revios make up a lug. So essentially what he says is, if you want to see how much a revios is, fill up this utensil, pour it out into four cups, equally distributed to four cups, and that ultimately is a revios for each. Okay? Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Tamya kadmaisa. So we'll say tamya tanaisa kadmaisa. Look at the Rashbam again. Tanaisa mida. So again, this is the name of another measurement. But here's what's interesting. Apparently, the size of a tamniyasa changed over time. So there was the old tamniyasa and the new tamniyasa. So the earlier tamniyasa, the hava b'Tveria that they had in Tveria, havi yisera al da revia, was a quarter of a revius more. Was a quarter of a revius more? I should say not a quarter of a revius. Was a revius more than the present tamniyasa? So we have this concept, by the way, in shiurim, that sometimes shiurim get larger, sometimes shiurim get smaller, depending on a whole variety of circumstances. So what the Gemara is saying over here is that what they used to call a tamniyasa is in reality one revius more than what they presently call a tamniyasa. Uba misharin revius shal pesach. And this is another way that you can go ahead and measure out the revius of pesach. So how would you measure out the revius from this? Take a look at the Rashbam. Rashbam says tamniyasa mida v'hainu tuman. So okay, is the tuman. He's just giving another name for this measurement. Havas yisirasa yisira alda tamnia. So uba mishaim revia shal pesach. Shaim emalin osa umearin lusoch shal achsha. So we'll say, if you want to see what a revia is, what do? Take an old tamnias utensil, pour it into a new tamnias utensil, and what? Whatever is left in the old tamnias utensil, that's a revia. That's revius. And I will say, you wonder to yourself, like, why do people have to go through all this? You have to understand something, that for the common person, a common person wasn't well-versed in shiurim, how much is a revius? But if you gave them simple ways to measure a revius based on the common measurements they were using for commerce, that was a much easier way. See, we live in a different time, and the truth is, when we say that a person is not educated, even our most uneducated person has access to all different types of information. There, an uneducated person didn't have access. So Chazal said, okay, very nice. So you have to drink a revius for dollar kosos. Okay, and then what happens? What if I don't know what a revius is? I don't know what a revius is. And maybe I don't even live in a place where I can ask someone what a revius is. Okay, so now what Chazal do is, okay, everybody's pretty much using weights and measures in some way, shape, or form. So you know when you go to the market and you buy a kasta of fish fats, okay, it's okay. That size of a kasta pitcher, that's dalet kosos. Or you know the tamniyasa, again, these were measurements that people were familiar with. The tamniyasa, just fill up an old tamniyasa, pour it into an old tamniyasa, and whatever is left in the old tamniyasa pitcher, that's a revius. And it was just an easy way to teach the common man how much they needed ultimately for dalet kosos. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Chista, revius shel Torah. So now the Gemara gives another measurement. So what's a revius? What's a revius shel Torah? So if you take a look at the Rashbam says revius shel Torah. He says kigon revius gayin shel nazir. Halacha l'moshe misinai. So we'll say again, remember, revius, when we say now, revius of dalet kosos, of course, is not the biblical revius, because dalet kosos themselves are not a biblical revius, are not the biblical obligation. So what are we talking about over here? So the Gemara says, kigon revius gayin shel nazir. So for example, we know that a nazir only breaks his Nazirite vow if what? If Lamaisa he has consumed a revius of wine. So the Gemara says, revius dam haba mishnei mesim, the nafkan la mikra, ukegon revius shemen lerekike nazir, di ikol di olefle mikraim of nachos, umidas chalala kli berivua. Okay, so we'll say, the Rashi Panchas is pointing out, there are many cases where, again, midda oraisa, in order for something to occur, I need a revius. So what is the shear of a biblical revius? It's actually interesting. So the Gemara says, you can measure it like this. You can measure it. It is revius Torah etzba'ayim al etzba'ayim birum etzba'ayim v'chatzi etzba v'chomesh etzba. So it's two finger breaths long by two finger breaths wide, and two finger breaths plus a half a finger breath plus a fifth of a finger breath for height. I guess in some way, somehow, this was supposed to make it easier, right? But the idea is what it's allowing you to do is it's allowing you to visualize a volume measurement. That's what it's doing. So when you're doing the two finger breaths, you'd be able to mark out how much liquid would fill up that space.
Why should it be different than previous for
Only because you'd have to be more exact in a shear for a d'oraisa. So then a d'rabbanon. So a d'rabbanon, we can allow. On a d'rabbanon, we're okay with allowing you to tell you use the kasta d'morisa or use the tamniyasa. Even though we recognize that it's not really an exact science, because remember utensils also weren't mass produced. Which means that by definition, there's always some margin of error. Mm-hmm. So in the Gemara, but what the Gemara seems to be saying is that for a d'oraisa, we'd want you to use a little bit more of an exact measurement. Okay. An average etzba. Every time we always go by averages. It's an average etzba. So the Gemara goes weiter. So the Gemara says, Shalo yehe kidesanyo. Verachas, it's no different, by the way. We have etzba'os from many different shum. We've seen this many times already in the Masechtos that we've learned, right? And it's always average size etzba'os. So if you have chubby fingers, thin fingers, little fingers, you are not good for this particular Gemara. You have to have a friend with average fingers to help you out. So the Gemara says, it's not good to be average in anything in life except with your finger size. Okay, so the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says, Kidisanya, we have a brace that supports this. V'rochatz b'mayim es kol b'sarov. So we'll say the Torah says, you should, now again, we'll say the Gemara now is also using this, going to use this same conversation now from mikvah. Again, we're not really going to get into the mathematical dimensions of this because it's not really necessary for our sake. The only reason the Gemara is bringing this up now, there's only one reason, is because we discussed Revius. So once we brought up the topic of Revius, and now that we bring up the topic of Revius, what else do? We brought up ways in which you can measure a Revius. So the Gemara is bringing this down as well, but it really doesn't have much to do with our actual topic. So the Gemara says, the sign of Rachatz, the mime is called Bisaro. You shall wash your flesh, literally wash your flesh in the water. So we'll say this is talking about, again, the mikvah. This is actually talking about a man who has a seminal emission. So the pasuk reads, V'ish kiseitzi a man who shichvas zera. Person has a seminal emission. V'rachatz p'mayim is kol b'saro. He will wash his flesh, all of his flesh in water. V'tamei ad ha'aret. And he will go ahead and be tamei until the evening. So what does it mean? V'rachatz p'mayim is kol b'saro. Number one, shalo yehi davar chotzeitz bein b'saro l'mayim. So we'll say the first thing we learn from here is that the pasuk says, V'rachatz es b'saro, v'rachatz p'mayim es kol b'saro. It didn't have to say kol bisaro. What could it have said? Berachatz b'mayim es bisaro. Why kol bisaro? To teach you that what? There could be no chatzitza. I'll say chatzitza is an interposition. Chatzitza is something that would serve as an obstruction between your body and the water. So the fact that the Torah uses the lashon of kol indicates when you go to the mikvah, and again, Abbas, we're only used to these halachos when it comes to, let's say, a woman immersing in a mikvah for nida. But the truth is, remember, in times of the Beis HaMikdash, everybody has to be careful with ritual purity, and these same halachos would apply to everyone. So you couldn't go to the mikvah ultimately if you had some kind of chatzitza, some type of interposition. Take a look at the Rashbam, kol bisaro. So the Rashbam writes, midlo kasa bisaro. Since the Torah could have just said Barachatz Bisara, but the Torah didn't say that. Mashmasha kol gufa ola bohem. That it has, we learn from here that your entire body has to be able to go into the water. She'eno nira ela kula mechusa bohem. Rather, your entire flesh has to be covered by the water. Can't be any kind of interposition. Furthermore, what else does it say? The Gemara says, Bimayim. What does it mean when it says it has to be immersed in the water? Bimei mikvah. Es kol bisaro. Also, what do we learn from kol b'saro? Mayim shekol gufa ola bahen. So we learn from here that a mikvah has to be large enough that it could contain enough water that could potentially cover the entire body. Now, I want to be clear on something. You see, when we think about this, we think about it in terms of depth. But remember, you could have a mikvah. You could have a mikvah that doesn't have to be very deep. But remember, as long as it's large enough that a person could lie down in it, also meaning you could have the requisite amount of water in two different ways. Either you could build it narrow and deep, right? Because, like for example, the Mishnah is in mikvahs bring down. Well, I have to go Mishnah mikvahs. Stick to this. So there are two ways you could do it. You could build it again narrow and deep, so it's the same amount of water, but again you're pushing it all to one area. Or even if it's a little bit more shallow, but it's spread out to the point, as long as it's deep enough that when I lay down, my entire body is submersed with water. But we learn two things out from this pasuk. Number one, that there can't be any kind of chatzitza. There can't be anything interrupting between the body and the waters of the mikvah. And number two, that there has to be enough water in a mikvah to cover the body of a person. So the Gemara says, v'kamehain, and how much is this? So the first thing the Gemara does over here is give the dimensions of a mikvah. So the basic dimensions of a mikvah, that again, I will say, and these are set for an average-sized person. Obviously, if a person is exceptionally large, so these particular dimensions would not work for them. But for an average-sized person, what would be the dimensions of a mikvah that would allow for enough water to cover the body of an individual? Amma al amma, one amma by one amma, birum shalosh amos, with the height of 3 amos. So also remember, an amma is a foot and a half, approximately, anywhere between a foot and a half and 2 feet. So an amma by an amma with a height of 3 amos would contain enough water. Again, we'll discuss how much water that is in tomorrow's daf. But an amma by an amma with three amos high, in order to be able to contain enough water to cover the body of an average individual. V'shi'uro chachamim shir me'mikva arbim sa'a. And therefore, again, Chazal gave an objective amount to this, and they call this 40 sa'ah of water. I will say, we'll discuss exactly how much that is. Amr Ravashi. So Ravashi said to me the following. Amr Li Ravin Bar Chinina. Ravin Bar Chinina said to me, Shulchan Shal Mikdash Shal Prakim Haba. So based on what you just said, that a mikvah, the basic size for a mikvah, in order for it to contain enough water to provide ritual purification, would have to be an amma by an amma with 3 amos of height. Therefore, it must have been that the shulchan of the Beis HaMikdash was shel prakim hava. It must have been made of parts. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at the Rashbam. Some will say this in the wide lines of the Rashbam, probably about 7 lines in. Last few words on line, shulchan shel mikdash. Shulchan shel zahav. Sha'asa Moshe. So we'll remember the golden shulchan that Moshe Rabbeinu made that was used to hold the lechem aparim, the showbread. Uksiv bei, and it says about it, Amasayim arko, 2 amos in length, Amo rachbo, it was an amon width, Va'amo v'chitzi kamaso, and it was an amon and a half in height. So the Gemara says that it must have been made, it couldn't have been one solid piece. It must have been made of at least 2 pieces. Why? Shaprakim ava, she'echolin lifrok, rochbo l'shnayim. So we'll say, remember, so the Gemara says it must have been that it was made of pieces, that it could be disassembled. Now, why does the Gemara make that assumption? Go back to the top of the Gemara for just a moment, but keep your hand in the Rashbam. Because if you're going to think that the Shulchan was made of one piece, Amsa ba'amsa hechi matbalei, then how would you have ever been able to be tovel? How could you have ever immersed the shulchan in a mikvah? So look at the Rashbam. If you think, tell me that you can't go ahead and disassemble the shulchan. So we'll say, now what is the Gemara's question based on? The Gemara is making an assumption that we know there was a mikvah in the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. Because again, I will say you needed to have one because it's possible that things become ritually impure just over the course of time. So what happens? Now, the assumption the Gemara is going to make is that the dimensions of the mikvah and the Beis HaMikdash must have been just basic dimensions. An amma by an amma with a height of 3 amos. What's the problem? If that's the case, if you have an amma that's one amma by 1 amma, then what? And the shulchan itself is 1 amma wide. You're not getting the shulchan into the mikvah. So it must have been that what? It must have been that the shulchan was made of pieces. So what would you do? You would take apart the shulchan and immerse it piece by piece. Look at the Rashbam. Because Rashbam says, because if that was not the case, how would you have ever toveled the shulchan? See, right over here the following. Heichi matzi matbilei. Look at the Rashbam. Hoil barach bo amma. Since the width is an amma. Piklishu amal amma. The makom the mikvah hayasham bazara kidi isa besedir yoma. Inami ba amas hamayim shabazar shabamat bilin klishar shinitmu. Vahaisa rachba amma. Vaal shem kach nikra amma. Kidis nan. Elu ve elu mis arbin ba amma. Veloshon rishon rabinu yakub mid amrav ashi lemil se gabi mikvah. Hashul. So I will say again, we don't have to get into this right, but the Rashbam pointed out that either we're talking about an actual mikvah in the Beis HaMikdash, or the Gemara talks about the fact that there was a channel of water that would flow through the Beis HaMikdash. We actually learned this earlier. If you remember again, when we spoke about the shechting of the Korban Pesach, So you remember again, the Gemara says that there was so much blood and schmutz on Erev Pesach that what would they do? They would have to plug up, they had like drains in the floor of the Beis HaMikdash. They would plug up the drains, they would open up the Amas Haim, this channel of water, they would flood the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, and then they would open the drains and everything would drain out. So whether we're talking about the channel or they're talking about the mikvah, the Gemara is just saying over here, the assumption is that that is a one amma by one amma area, in which case immersing the shulchan as a whole would have been impossible. So therefore, must say the shulchan was made of parts in order to disassemble it and immerse it piece by piece. And the Rashbam points out this last line over here, it's the fourth to the last line of the Rashbam, ha-shulchan mekabel tumah. The shulchan, like other utensils, is capable of receiving tumah. Kedamina b'chomer b'kodesh. The Amrei Shlokish, my dichsiv ha-shulchan ha-tar, nechla shu tamei. So I will say again, remember, utensils in the Beis HaMikdash can become tamei. However that may be, a sheretz dies. A sheretz finds its way into the Beis HaMikdash and dies right on the shulchan. So whatever the situation is, you have to have the ability to be tovel the kelim. So the Gemara says something amazing. The Gemara says, my kusha, why are you having such a kasha? Dilma biyam sha'asa shlomo ha-vamapyalei. So we'll say the Gemara gives a fascinating answer. The Gemara says, your kasha is only based on the fact that you're assuming that here's what we know. We know there was a mikvah in the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. You're assuming that that mikvah conformed to minimum dimensions of one amma by one amma by three ammas high. So the Gemara just says, how do you know that's true? How do you know that's true? For all you know, what are we talking about over here? Abba said, the Gemara calls this the Yam Shel Shlomo. The Yam Shel Shlomo literally means the pool of Shlomo HaMelech. Rashbam doesn't comment on this for some reason, but we know that Shlomo HaMelech made a massive, it's a pool. It's a pool. What happens is Shlomo HaMelech did incredible things in the Beis HaMikdash, incredible mastery and artwork. So one of the things that he did was he made a kiur. He made a massive kiur, a massive laver, right? And so, which, remember, the Kohanim, when they came into the Beis HaMikdash in the morning, had to go and wash their hands and feet. So there was a whole discussion, without getting into it right now, but to get into a little bit. So there's a whole discussion of that water that's in the kiur is not supposed to remain overnight. So Shlomo HaMelech made a whole contraption where he created an underground pool with a pulley system, a pulling the lever system, and every night the kiur was lowered down into this pool. That pool itself was a mikvah and prevented the waters in the kiur from becoming invalidated. So all the Gemara is just simply saying is, I don't understand why you're assuming that we're going ahead and using a mikvah that's one amma by three ammas, and that forces you to say that the shulchan must have been made of pieces, otherwise you would never been able to be tovel it. There's a much simpler answer. There was a much larger mikvah, a much larger potential mikvah in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash called the Yam Shel Shlomo, the pool of Shlomo HaMelech. It's just as easy that they could have toveled anything in there, and that was huge. That was large enough. That was large enough that you could have immersed the shulchan even as one whole piece within that particular pool. Okay, so the Gemara is just saying, it's an interesting discussion in general, because when you look at the fabrication of the kelim, so we seem to indicate that lemaisa they were made of one piece, right? At least some of them. But yet the Gemara entertains the possibility that the shulchan may have been made of multiple pieces. Okay, so it says the Gemara weiter. So we'll say, if you remember again, so going back to the statement of the Mishnah said that everybody has to drink four cups of wine, even an Ani Shebi Yisrael, even a poor person has to still drink. And even if he has to be supported by the community, even if he's getting from the Tamchuy, you have to give him Dalet Kosel. Says the Gemara, Hechi mitakni rabbanon, midi di asi bilidei sakana. So we'll say, now we are going to get into a very interesting discussion, which is the discussion of Zugos. Zugos means that Chazal, we actually saw this in Brachos already, the concept of doing things in pairs, and the idea that Chazal felt that doing things in pairs actually creates a danger of shadim, a danger of a variety of different things. So there's a whole discussion. Again, we're not going to get really into it right now. You'll do your own research and homework on it about what this means. Because when you read some of this stuff, it sounds like superstitions. Mm-hmm. So the truth is, the Maharal, The Maharal, again, you have to understand also the Maharal of Prague in general. It's actually interesting because the Maharal is one who they tell all the stories about the Golem with. So the Maharal of Prague in general felt that when it comes to things like Shadim, the Maharal felt that it was all a metaphor. The Maharal did not feel that there's such a thing, a real thing as Shadim. And this is what Chazal, these are the words or the phrases that Chazal used in order to go ahead and make a point. Sometimes you can illustrate a point a little bit better through a little bit more of a storyline. But this, so you know, we saw, actually, we will see, the Gemara has the whole story of Shlomo HaMelech and Ashmedai. And the Maharal has a whole metaphorical understanding of that particular story. So there's the Maharal advances another approach, which is, that the concept of Zugos, why did Chazal not want you to do things in pairs? Because you have to understand something, and especially in times of the Gemara, there was a very strong push from outside influences towards the concept of dualism. So dualism is different than polytheism, because polytheism believes in many different gods. Dualism just believes in two gods, bless you, right? There's a good god and a bad god. When I say good god, bad god, there's one, which by the way, is not so different in Christianity. There's also a concept, there's God and there's Satan, and Satan does have power. Satan is very different than our Malach HaMaves, than our Yetzirah, who has no independent power. He's under the Shechita of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if you look in so the concept of Zugos, according to many, was instituted by Chazal in order to dispel the notion of dualism. So the Chazal said, stay away from twos in order to go ahead. And this was all not because we're afraid of any kind of, you know, hocus pocus or any kind, even though Gemara will seem to talk about that stuff, bless you. But it was there to go ahead and impress a theological reality upon the populace, that we reject the notion of two. We reject the notion of dualism. And sometimes the easiest way to ingrain a theological philosophy within the population is how? Through simple behaviors. If people again begin to reject the notion of twos and stay away from twos, there'll be a trickle, I don't know if you call it trickle down, or trickle up effect in terms of their theology as well. So the Gemara therefore asks, now here you're telling me I have to drink Dalet Kosos. How can you go ahead and ask, how could Chazal institute something that would go ahead and bring a person to Sakana? What's the Sakana? Look at the Rashbam. So Rashbam says, Mima Takmi, Arba Kosos, Shein Zugos. Because what's four cups? Four cups are two pairs of two. So he says, the asi bahuli de sakana, the filaman, the omar, the kaman, the arba, inba mishum zugos, elabitray. So fine. So says the Gemara, how could Chazal have instituted dalet kosos when again it's zugos, it's pairs, and it's going to bring a person to sakana? But I tell you, we learned, lo yochal adam trey, a person should not eat two things. Right, meaning should not just dafki two things, below yishtetrei, should not engage in two acts of drinking. And Rashbam points out zugos, because these are pairs. Below yikaneach trei, so we'll see what this case is, that a person literally should not wipe himself twice, we'll see what that is. Below yaaset shtroch of trei, he shouldn't take care of his needs twice. So if you look at the Rashbam says over here, tzrachav is tashmish, right? That a person shouldn't engage in relations twice. Now we'll see what that means also. Amr of Nachman Amakra. So we'll say, so the obvious kasha then is what? So the obvious kasha is, so how can Chazal institute Dalet Kosos, which by definition is two sets of two, which is Zugos, which then goes ahead and could create a problem. The Gemara is saying of Sakana. So how can you do this? To which the Gemara says, Amrav Nachman, Amakra, Leil Shimurim. Oh, because what does the Torah call? What does the Torah call the night of Pesach? It's a Leil Shimurim. And I will say, we'll discuss this motif of Leil Shimurim. By the way, we know Leil Shimurim means it's a night that's guarded. What does that mean? That things that we would normally have to be concerned about over the course of the rest of the year, the nice again, we don't have to be concerned about on the night of the Seder. This manifests itself for us in a much more tangible way, which is why we don't say the Brach of Hamapi, right? We don't say Kriya Shema Alamita. Remember, we saw Mesechus Brachos. That what? That Kriya Shema Alamita was instituted for what purpose? For what purpose? For the Mazikin. Because again, there's a fear, there's a concern that there are certain destructive forces that are at play at night. But on the night of Pesach, again, because it is a Leil Shimurim, one does not have to worry about these particular things. So Gemara says, same thing with Zugos. Whatever concern Zugos may bring doesn't apply on the night of Pesach. Rava, Amar Rava says, different answer. Kol shel bracha mitztarif l'tova, ve'enu mitztarif l'ra. This is interesting. So what does Rava say? So Rava says, no, you have to understand something. That a kosher, when we speak about zugos, so when were Chazal concerned about the pairs, the zugos? So when is that? That's with stam drinking. stop drinking, so a person just engaging in a regular act of drinking, that's when lemaisa you have to be concerned with zugos. But when do you not have to be concerned with zugos? When it's a kosher bracha, or in other words, when you are engaged in the performance of a mitzvah, you need not worry about any potential danger that may arise from zugos. Ravina says, Arba kosi takinu rabbanon derech erus. Ravina gives a third answer. Both says, so far we've had two answers as to why you don't have to worry about zugos on the night of the Seder. Either A, leil shimurim, B, kos shal mitzvah. You don't have to worry about zugos in the case of mitzvah. And now number three, Arba kosi takinu rabbanon derech erus. The rabbis instituted four cups as an expression of our freedom on the night of the Seder. Kol chad v'chad tap of kuf yud. Kol chad v'chad mitzvah ba'ape nafsha. And every cup is a mitzvah by itself. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at the Rashbam. Actually, Rashbam and Rashi say the same thing over here. V'ein mitztarfin ze lo ze. And therefore what? And therefore they do not combine with each other. I mean, I will say again, the issue of zugos is when you're doing things in pairs. Really what the Gemara is answering, which is a very Ravina's answer, is it's not pairs. It's only called pairs when you do things consecutively. But Lamaisa, I'll say, if you look at the way the Dalet Kosos are arranged over the course of the Seder, they're anything but consecutive. Remember, again, we're making Kiddush on cup number one. Cup number two is at the end of Magid, which is, I mean, it's at least 3-4 hours, right, with Magid until you get from, right? I'm sorry, 5-6, right? It's a little while. It's a little while between Kiddush and ultimately that goes. Then again, after between 2 and 3, then you have the meal, right? 3 is Birkas HaMazon, and then 4 is at the end of this, towards the end of the Seder. So what Ravina is answering is each mitzvah is, each kos is a mitzvah by itself. Now when he says a mitzvah by itself, what he's really saying is each kos stands alone. Because they each stand alone, therefore lemaisa, there's no continuity between one and the other, which by the way is also why we make a separate bracha on each of them. And because of that, there is no concept of zugos by these particular kosos. We'll say we'll stop over here. We're going to continue Emir Tashem with the topic of zugos Emir Tashem tomorrow. That would be the worst. Yeah, beautiful.